Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 2 to verse 5. Then the Lord replied, "Write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it. For the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end and will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. See, the enemy is puffed up. His desires are not right, are not upright, but the righteous person will live by his faithfulness. Indeed, wine betrays him. He is arrogant, never at rest, because he is as greedy as the grave, and like death is never satisfied. He gathers to himself all the nations and take captives all the peoples." Here's a date for you. 31st of October, 1517. That's 504 years ago. And that is a date that went down in history. It's a date that changed the world. Any ideas what happened? Martin Luther, yes, you're right. Martin Luther hammered the 95 Theses onto the door of Wittenberg Castle. And no one really cared. A farmer probably went past and was like, "Oh, hey, Martin, hey, yeah." That's about it. But on the 31st of October, 1517, what sparked the Reformation is what happened there. So come with me to Wittenberg. It's a town in Saxony, in Germany. And there, just because Naomi's here, a new university has been built. The principal of the university has a task ahead of him to recruit the staff that are going to make a name for this university. And one of the names that he ends up hiring is a man by the name of Martin Luther. Now, Martin Luther was a man of his time. He'd just graduated university with a law degree. He was all set to live his dad's dream of being the top of society. But one evening, as he was traveling home, he was almost hit by a bolt of lightning. And in his panic, he called out that he would become a monk if he was kept safe. Well, he was kept safe, so that's what he did. His father was absolutely furious with him. He'd gone from the top of the pile as a lawyer, a career with money and prestige, to being a monk, notoriously poor and the lowest in society. But Martin Luther, in the University of Wittenberg, was going to change the world. He was going to be a key player in what we call now the Reformation. The Reformation affected everything. It affected work life, family life, church life. As the gospel shone forth again from Saxony into Germany, into Europe, and into the rest of the world. Now, Dave, that's a nice bit of history you've just given us there. But we're not here to look at history tonight. No, we're looking at the Bible. And we're going to be looking at Habakkuk chapter 2, because the Reformation focused in on this particular verse that we're looking at tonight. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 4. Because getting that verse right is what sparked a fire 504 years ago tonight. There are reasons why this verse was the linchpin of that moment. Now, I don't want to put you down if you are a history fan. I know there's some people in our church who've done degrees in history. Feel free to ask me a bit more later if you like. But have a look at Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 4. This is where my study is. It says this. "See, the enemy is puffed up. His desires are not upright. But the righteous person will live by his faithfulness." The book of Habakkuk, we went through it as a church a couple of years ago. It's a book that records a conversation. A conversation between Habakkuk, a prophet in Israel, and God. And to simplify the storyline as much as is possible, Habakkuk is basically asking God, "What are you playing at?" Habakkuk is looking at Israel around him and asking God how it is that his people can be so messed up. The people of God acting like everyone else. No, in fact, worse than everyone else. Why does God let that happen? Why doesn't God do anything about it? What is God playing at? And so God responds to Habakkuk saying, "Yeah, you're right. And I am going to do something about it." If you remember, the shock then comes. God says, I will deal with it. But you're not going to like it. In fact, I'm going to send the Babylonians to come and wipe out the nation. Of course, Habakkuk replies to that saying, how can you do this? How can you use a more wicked people to do this? And that's where we join the story. Habakkuk chapter 2, verses 2 to 4. Here's what God replies. The Lord replied, write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it. For the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end and will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. See, the enemy is puffed up. His desires are not upright, but the righteous person will live by his faithfulness. What does it look like to live by faith? See, those Reformation sparking words there at the end of verse 4 come in a context where God's been saying he's going to deal with pride. It's a similar idea to what we've been seeing in Isaiah on a Sunday night. The pride of the Babylonians as they come down to tear Israel to bits will be dealt with by God. In comparison, the faith of the righteous person will produce life. So this evening, that's what I want us to reflect on. This is an idea that is central to the gospel, an idea that was famously brought back into light at the Reformation. It's an idea that the New Testament points us to at least three explicit times as it quotes this particular verse. You'll find it in Romans, you'll find it in Galatians, and you'll find it in Hebrews. So what does it look like then to live by faith? It looks like waiting on God to keep his promises. What does it look like to live by faith? It looks like waiting on God to keep his promises. Let's think through that answer. Let's have a look at the waiting part first, shall we? Because verses 2 and 3 of Habakkuk chapter 2, they imply a wait. Then the Lord replied, write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it, for the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end, and it will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. So even though Babylon is soon going to ravage Israel, Habakkuk and the people with him, they're going to have to wait. God has made a promise, and his promise will come true. And that promise you can find in chapter 1, verse 12, if you're interested. But the temptation for Habakkuk and for the other people in the land is going to be to try and speed things up, to take matters into their own hands. It can be hard to wait, can't it? Just ask one of the kids about Christmas. Or perhaps you know that yourself. But waiting, it's an exercise in humility, isn't it? Waiting means not relying on yourself. Waiting is saying that there is someone else in control and everything else rests on them. Now, don't mishear me. Waiting doesn't mean standing still. It's not a case of stopping everything until God comes. That's not how the Bible envisages waiting at all. The Bible actually calls us to be active in our waiting. But we're not to be impatient. Because faith is not relying on ourselves. Faith is trusting that God will do everything needed to keep his promise. And that's exactly what the gospel is, isn't it? God's promise that he himself guarantees. You could say it's faith from first to last. I mean, that's what Paul says in Romans chapter 1. For in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last, just as it is written in Habakkuk, the righteous will live by faith. You see, Paul in Romans sees Habakkuk 2 that way. So we, this evening, should be waiting people. Faith looks like waiting on God to keep his promises. So we're waiting on God. That's our next part of the answer to look at. Do you remember Habakkuk's contrast? It's between those who have faith and those who are proud. So what is it to be proud? Well, to quote one poet, pride is thinking that we are the masters of our fate, the captains of our souls. For the Babylonians, that looks like as they stomp on the world, thinking that you're the ones in control. They're the ones who think their power is on display. They believe that they are holding onto all their cards. But the truth is that the ability they have to do what they're doing comes from God. Habakkuk uses language to parody God, actually, in chapter one of Habakkuk. Now, I think this is cool, but I'm a geek. But you're going to indulge me because I'm in charge. Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 8. Just have a look at that. The Babylonians, they fly like eagles, sweeping to devour. The Bible says that God is the one who carries people on eagle's wings, Isaiah chapter 40 or Deuteronomy 32. Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 9. The Babylonians advance like a desert wind and they gather prisoners like sands. If you're a growth group leader or if you're going to a growth group this week, you'll notice God is the one who promises Abraham that he'll have descendants, the number of the sand on the seashore. Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 10. The Babylonians, they mock kings, they scoff at rulers. But Psalm 2, God in heaven laughs. See, Habakkuk, he's playing off key Bible images to show the Babylonians that they're not really in control. But in puffing themselves up, they've removed God from the picture. In thinking their own abilities have done all of this, they've shoved God off to the side. But faith looks like waiting on God. So to rely on anything else is not faith. If you know your Bibles, Israel learned that when they tried to rely on the law. As they sought their own righteousness, their own right standing before God, they sought to do it on their own. Israel thought they could keep the law perfectly. But it was just their pride, thinking they were good enough on their own merits. But the law was never meant to do that. It was always meant to be by faith, trusting that God would rescue from mess-ups. You see, the law in the Old Testament is more like a dad with a child than it has a policeman with a criminal. It's more about tender care than it is with strict policing. And the same comes through to today. I don't know if you've read a newspaper recently. I read one for the first time in I don't know how long, just to prepare for this. But I only took a few quick flicks to see how people are trying to earn their innocence today, how people are seeking to earn righteousness. Just a couple of examples from the newspaper this week. I'm hoping they're not doing this tomorrow as I drive around the M25. But you might read the stories of Insulate Britain. They say that the great sin of this world is pollution. And so in order to earn innocence, in order to be right, well, they're blockading the roads to make their point. Or you just turn the next page of the newspaper and you read about the recent meatless boom. Meatless meat. Go figure that one out. But the CEO of one of those companies says that he started the business, and this is a quote, to be innocent of the crimes against our planet and against each other. See, from those stories through to the random acts of kindness, the social action, the charity shops, they're not bad things. But we can dupe ourselves into thinking that we ourselves can make ourselves right. We can make ourselves innocent. You might think that is one way of making yourself right with God. Or it can go the complete opposite way. What do I mean? Well, we can think that nothing can be done to make us right. Sometimes we feel deep down that what we've done is far too much to be forgiven. We think that because we believe it's so bad, that nothing can make us right. But at the end of the day, they're both the same thing. They're both attitudes of not faith, because both are prideful deep down. See, both are saying, if I can't save myself, if I can't see how to do this, well, then no one else can save me. But what does it look like to live by faith? It looks like waiting on God, because God is the one who can make us right. He is the one who can justify us, the one who can give us life. And therefore, we should not rely on anything else to make us right. We should believe that God can do what he says and wait on him. And all I'm doing is saying what Paul says in Galatians chapter 3, verse 11. Clearly, no one who relies on the law is justified before God because, there's Habakkuk again, the righteous will live by faith. So, brothers and sisters, that's what we ought to be doing. And if we really get that, it'll mean we won't shrink back, because faith looks like waiting on God to keep his promises. For Habakkuk, he was going to have to wait. He and the faithful people of Israel, they were going to have to wait for God to bring about all that he promised. Because God has, chapter 1, verse 12, appointed a day of judgment. If you think about judgment, the flip side of the coin is salvation. On that day, God will save. And so faith trusts God to keep his promise, because faith is taking God at his word. For Habakkuk, that's going to look like accepting what's coming as the Babylonians sweep through his homeland. As it looks like everything is going wrong, as it is pretty uncomfortable for God's people. And it's still the same thing today. You see, God doesn't promise that things are going to be easy. In fact, things may become pretty uncomfortable too. But having faith, trusting God to keep his promises, will mean that we stand firm. And that means we're saved in the end. It means we don't give up waiting. It means we're not shrinking back, but instead we're coming near. We take God at his promise that we can approach him. Because Jesus has done everything we need to approach God. In fact, he's done more than we actually appreciate right now. So if you're feeling like you're shrinking back, you can rely on Jesus for all you need. Because God has and God will keep his promises. So you can take him at his words. Just look at Jesus and see that. And once again, I'm just riffing off what Hebrews chapter 10 says. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 36 to 39. You need to persevere so that when you've done the will of God, you will receive what has been promised. For in just a little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. And, but my righteous one will live by faith. And I take no pleasure in the one who shrinks back. But we do not belong to those who shrink back and are destroyed, but to those who have faith and are saved. So the big point is this. Let's take God at his word and wait on God to keep his promises. What I want us to do tonight is to focus on the Reformation, what was going on at that moment, and say, let's live by faith. Let's recover that main part of the gospel there. Because that is the truth that Martin Luther found as he studied his Bible. That is the truth that shone a light, a truth that changed the world as we know it. It's not something new, but instead something that had always been there. But it was a clarity on that very truth, a clarity that Habakkuk 2 verse 4 says, the righteous person will live by his faithfulness. So we're going to give thanks for that fact, that it's nothing of us, but it's all of him. And we want to recommit ourselves to that truth as those who have faith, as those who have life, as those who are right in God's sight, waiting on God to keep his promises.
And a two.
When I was just a younger man, I studied canon law. All effort was a challenge, it was just to please my pa. Then came the storm, the lightning struck, I called upon St. Anne. I shaved my head, I took my vows in Augustinian. No, papal bulls, indulgences, and transubstantiation. Speak your mind against them and face excommunication. Nail your theses to the door, let's start a reformation. Papal bulls, indulgences, and transubstantiation. When Tetzel came near Wittenberg, St. Peter's prophet sore, I wrote a little notice for the All Saints bulletin board. You cannot purchase merits, for we're justified by grace. Here's 95 more reasons, Brother Tetzel, in your face. So, papal bulls, indulgences, and transubstantiation. Speak your mind against them and face excommunication. Nail your theses to the door, let's start a reformation. Papal bulls, indulgences, and transubstantiation. They loved my tracts, adored my wit, all were exemplar. The Pope, however, hold me up before the Emperor. Are these your books to you, recant King Charles did demand? I will not change my diet, sir, God help me, here I stand. And oh, papal bulls, indulgences, and transubstantiation. Speak your mind against them and face excommunication. Mail your theses to the door that start a reformation. Papal bulls, indulgences, and transubstantiation. Frederick took the wise approach, responding to my words, by knighting George as hostage in the kingdom of the birds. Use Brother Martin's model in the languages you seek. Stay locked inside a castle with your Hebrew and your Greek. Oh, papal bulls, indulgences, and transubstantiation. Speak your mind against them and face excommunication. Nail your theses to the door that start a reformation. Papal bulls, indulgences, and transubstantiation. Let's raise our steins and conquered books while gathered in this place, and spread the word that Catholic is spelled with lowercase. The word remains unfettered when the spirit gets his chance. So come, my Katie, drop your lute and join us in our dance. So, papal bulls, indulgences, and transubstantiation. Speak your mind against the men, face excommunication. Nail your theses to the door that start a reformation. Papal bulls, indulgences, and transubstantiation.